Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate your attendance tonight. It's not church night either. Isn't that wonderful? We are having massive thunderstorms around the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains near the Malloy compound this evening. So, if there is an interruption in service, you'll know why. And, of course, we don't have any way of dealing with that, do we, Kathy? I mean, if the power goes out, the power goes out. And we're just lost. Oh, well. Tonight, in about, well, after the break at the bottom of the hour, we are going to play for you what we played a couple of weeks ago, the return of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. And we're going to play that episode that we played a couple of weeks ago as kind of a refresher, because tomorrow night, Friday night, we have the new episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. And we'll play that tomorrow night, but we want to replay what we played a couple of weeks ago. That'll be in about a little over half an hour, not even that. So Facebook went public today, did they? $38 a share. Is that how it wound up? I have no idea. I don't play that game. Oh, by the way, this hour is being sponsored. Hello, by James again. James Surreal. Right. Today is the 17th, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. And James is the sponsor who wants you to join Ed Asner and representatives from the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There is a star-studded red carpet premiere of a film about 9/11 Tuesday coming at 7:30 p.m. at the Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills, if you live in that area. The documentary features new dramatic forensic evidence and expert testimony that will forever change how you view that fateful day. You can order tickets now at 911expertsspeakout.org. 911expertsspeakout.org. Go there and find out more about this important landmark film and how you can get involved and share the truth. So Facebook went public today. I think, didn't they? Do I have that right, Kathy? Did they go public today? I think they did. And the story to me is not, you know, who's going to be a billionaire and who's not going to be a billionaire. I think the story for me is the story about the co-founder, Eduardo Saverin. Have you heard about Eduardo, what Eduardo decided to do? Now, Eduardo, of course, is going to wind up a billionaire. It cracks me up. Billionaires for Facebook? Or is it tomorrow? Oh, tomorrow they go public? Okay, they go public tomorrow. See, I don't pay any attention. I guess Friday's a good day to do your IPO. Anyway, this guy is 30 years old. He was the one in the movie he's the one that had to file the lawsuit, right? To get some of the money. He was assigned Mark Zuckerberg as his roommate in the film, and I guess in the biography too, and their subsequent struggle over the company was finally detailed in the Academy Award-winning film Social Network. Eduardo was portrayed as an outsider who eventually only won his stake in the company through the lawsuit. Now, here's the interesting part about it. Eduardo has decided to renounce his U.S. citizenship and move to Singapore. And that allows this 30-year-old billionaire tomorrow to avoid paying a chunk of the taxes that he will owe on the windfall coming his way with the Facebook IPO. Now, according to Nation.com, in making his decision, the Brazilian native did more than expose his blind disregard for all that his adopted country has done for him. He has made himself the poster child for the callous class of the one-tenth of one-percenters who are all too happy to use national resources to enrich themselves and then skate or cry foul when asked to pay their fair share. The story evokes the image of the marauding aliens from the movie Independence Day who come to Earth to take what they can get before moving on to some other planet. Remember that? Anyway, Saverins, who stands to make billions, plural, from his 4% share in Facebook, moved here to the U.S. at the age of 13 when his name turned up on a list of potential kidnap victims targeted by criminal gangs in Brazil. Now, his father was a wealthy businessman with a high profile in Brazil, and so his family relocated to Miami to protect Eduardo. Eduardo, according to the Nation, thrived in his new country, eventually attending Harvard, where he was assigned, as a stroke of luck, to be a roommate to future Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Now, when you think about all the ways that young Eduardo's years in the United States played a role in the financial bonanza he's about to experience, and you can make the argument that Eduardo, has he done anything to earn billions of dollars? It's up to you. You make that call. But starting with the obvious protection from kidnapping that wealthy people generally enjoy here in the United States, he had that all the way through the reasonably functioning U.S. court system that awarded him the shares that are about to make him a billionaire. The U.S. played a critical role in this dude's life. Now, in return, Saverin has decided to relocate to Singapore, where he'll pay no capital gains on any Facebook shares he sells. And, of course, that's the only way he's going to make any money. He's got his stake. He's just waiting for the IPO. So, here, make me a billionaire. In fact, Saverin will only pay an exit tax when he leaves, which will be determined by his own team's estimated value of his net worth at the time he renounced his citizenship. Now, this could cost the U.S. Treasury as much as $600 million. That's a nice way to thank your adopted country, right? Now, $600 million to you and to me is, oh my God! But if you're awarded $3 or $4 billion, well, you get the point. And as Elise Hogue at The Nation writes, Saverin exemplifies the spoiled one percenter who erodes the fabric of the country, this country, that afforded such opportunity by not paying back the investment America made in him. His decisions are a slap in the face of every person who recognized that to be a place that can facilitate the birth of new innovation like Facebook, the United States needs resources. You doubt that? Remember what government funded the research that created the internet and the web? This government. And Harvard University, where the Facebook plot was hatched, took in almost $700 million in federal grant support for tuition research last year alone. But Saverin's decision is even more insulting, Elise Hogue writes, to the millions of his less wealthy fellow immigrants who work hard to gain the privilege of giving back to the country that affords them the opportunity to pursue their dreams in relative safely. So, to Eduardo Saverin, if we were on television, you would see my middle finger raised in your direction. What a creep you are, pal.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. But wait. Prairie 2 says it may not be the possibility of avoiding taxes that is prompting Eduardo to move to Singapore. Under the current Republican tax code, his tax liability isn't that great. Maybe as little as $200 million. And he doesn't have to pay capital gains until he actually sells the stock. Well, yeah, but, I mean, that's the whole idea, Bruce. Of course he's going to sell it, isn't he? Anyway, Bruce says if Mitt and his clan gain control, those taxes would be little, if anything. It's more likely he's becoming a Singapore citizen because living in a totally fascist country, he would, as a billionaire, enjoy rights and privileges that medieval kings could only dream of. Yeah, well, I'm sure that's the case. Hoo-ah. I wish Limbaugh would move to Singapore and light up one of his cigars on the street. Yeah. There would be a massive grease spot in the middle of the road, wouldn't there, when the authorities came by and said whatever they would say. We found out something here in Georgia a couple of months ago. Georgia is one of the states hardest hit with the trickery, treachery perpetrated by banks like J.P. Morgan Chase and the rest of these thugs. Bank of America, where it concerned selling people mortgages that they could not afford. And then reselling. Just horrible. Horrible stuff. Every time I think about that, I just get more and more angry. And the sons of bitches all escaped scot-free, too, didn't they? But anyway, in a little measly attempt to try to alleviate some of the suffering of these families that all of a sudden found themselves literally homeless, the feds allocated some money. $50 or $60 million came here to Georgia. Maybe closer to $90 million. And nobody knew about it. It has just sat in the state treasury or in some account for a couple of years. Finally, one of the television station investigative reporters here dug out the facts. And this filthy, disgusting, almost indicted when he was in Congress, governor that we have here. What's his name?
Nathan Deal.
I keep thinking Sonny Perdue. No, it was Nathan Deal. Now all of a sudden they're talking about, oh, okay, well, we'll let some of this go. But it's not just here. Hundreds of millions of dollars, according to the New York Times, meant to provide a little relief, is being diverted to plug state budget gaps. This is money that was supposed to go to struggling homeowners or homeowners about to be foreclosed on. There is no mercy in this country, is there? There's not a goddamn ounce of mercy for anybody, thanks to the right wingers in religion and business. No mercy at all. Nothing. In a budget proposed this week, California joined more than a dozen states that want to help close gaping shortfalls using money. Pay paid by the nation's biggest banks and earmarked for foreclosure prevention. Oh, that's where it came from, not the government. California was awarded more than $400 million from the banks, and Governor Jerry Brown has proposed using the bulk of that sum to pay the state's debts. That money was part of the national settlement valued at $25 billion, lunch money, negotiated with the five big banks over abuses in their mortgage and foreclosure processes, right? $25 billion? Oh, for Christ's sake. The settlement was reached back in February, and it came after a year of talks and intervention by the Obama administration. It was the second largest in history involving the states. The only bigger settlement was with the murderous tobacco industry. And the $25 billion represented the first large-scale commitment by banks to provide direct aid to borrowers. But the states, well, only 27 states have devoted all those funds from the banks to housing programs. So far, about 15 states have said they will use all or most of the money for other purposes. In Texas, $125 million went straight to the general fund. Missouri will use its $40 million to soften cuts to higher education. Why not tax the millionaires and billionaires that live in Missouri? Huh? Indiana is spending more than half its allotment to pay energy bills. Virginia will use most of its $67 million to help revenue-starved local governments. The only reason I bring this up is, you know, this money was in a ridiculous settlement negotiated by who? The Justice Department? Commerce Department? I don't even know. I don't know who does anything anymore. Do you? Who negotiates these deals? Do you know? I certainly don't. But the money was supposed to go to help people who were, what's the phrase, underwater. A lot of talk about water in the past 10 years, right? Waterboarding, drowning, underwater. Jesus. We'll be right back.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey. Right, with Mike Malloy.
Yes, indeed. I may have misspoke. Radio Gumshoe episode that we're going to play tonight will be about in the next hour. My bad if I said it otherwise. this hour being sponsored by James Surreal. It's not spelled like that, but... And his message, thanks, James, his message, please join Ed Asner and representatives from the 1,700-member Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth for the premiere of the film 9/11, Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. It'll be this coming Tuesday, May 22nd, 7:30 p.m., Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills. You can get tickets by going to 911expertsspeakout.org. James says, please visit 911expertsspeakout.org and find out more about this important landmark film and how you can get involved and share the truth. There you go. Some more miserable news. But first, an email from Roz in Canada. She writes, what's your best guess, Mike, as to what the U.S. would do in response to the following acts if they had been committed on American citizens on your home soil? Why your people aren't screaming and holding the government to account is totally beyond me. They're only worried about their own spoiled, rotten skins, I guess. I don't speak of everyone, as you can imagine. All day long, the American people are given tall tales about how they should be fearful and that the government needs to take more precautions to protect them. You know, the terror thing. As I see it, the only valid fear they should be harboring is toward their own leaders, who are dragging them down to hell in the proverbial handbasket. Example from Democracy Now. NATO has admitted it mistakenly killed an Afghan mother and five of her children in an airstrike last week. The airstrike occurred in Helmand Province. The Pentagon claimed responsibility after the killings were revealed by the government of Helmand. Meanwhile, there are reports that as many as 14 civilians were killed in another incident, I should say, in northwestern Badghis province. A spokesperson for Afghan President Hamid Karzai expressed dismay Monday over the airstrike, saying they are unacceptable to the Afghan government. In related news, three U.S. soldiers were killed in eastern Afghanistan on Monday. End quote. Democracy Now! Roz goes on, if you could hear me cursing out these men, Mike, even you would blush. These are not brave men doing brave deeds. They're cowardly, sniveling creeps who kill with impunity time after time. Has anybody kept track of how many innocents have been killed by the United States? Have these bastards had their pound of flesh yet? What will it take to satisfy them? Bush, too, opened a Pandora's box which nobody can now close. Any wonder the U.S. has become one of the most hated countries in the world? And that's not fair to all the good and decent people who happen to live there. Even the well-paid Hamid Karzai felt he had to speak out about these attacks. And he's not particularly loved by his people either. Yeah, he signed Roz. He always says something to the effect, this is not acceptable, and then it happens again. Well, that's over there. You want something a little bit closer? From Honduras, according to the Huffington Post, quoting the Honduran newspaper Tiempo, as well as the Honduran human rights group COFADA. And according to these reports, agents of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, dressed in military uniforms, killed at least four and possibly six civilians in a raid which took place on Friday, May 11th. The victims included two pregnant women and two children. The newspaper Tiempo did not pull any punches, writing that those killed, quote, were humble and honest citizens, end quote. Apparently, the DEA agents fired from helicopter gunships on a boat carrying civilians on the Patuca River. The boat was taking them back to their community, which itself is located on the Mosquito Coast of Honduras. According to the newspaper Tiempo, the DEA mistakenly fired upon the civilian boat because it was well lit, while the intended target, a boat allegedly carrying drug traffickers, was floating down the river without its lights on. According to Tiempo, the mayor of the victim's hometown, Ahuas, decried the killing, saying that, quote, these operations were performed irresponsibly, end quote, and that the people in his community live in fear, quote, because they now have the threat of operations because they kill poor people, end quote. COFADE, the Committee of the Families of the Disappeared in Honduras. COFADE. Has been very pointed in its condemnation of the role the U.S. played in these killings. COFADE was founded in 1982 in response to the disappearance of 70 people that year. As COFADE explains on its website, it believes that the disappearances took place in the 80s and was the direct result of the national security doctrine which the U.S. imposed on Honduras. This doctrine, according to COFADE, quote, included systematic and selective form of human rights violations. The most emblematic violations were torture, murder, and disappearances of the type which the U.S. had sponsored in the southern cone of South America in the 1970s. That would be Chile, Argentina, and other countries. In response to these DEA killings, COFADE put out a statement entitled Effects of the Military Occupation, which blames the U.S.'s decades-long policies in Latin America for the continued violence in countries like Honduras. As Cofada stated, quote, a foreign army, i.e. the U.S. Army, protected under the new hegemonic concept of the, quote, war on drugs, end quote, legalized with reforms by the 1953 military treaty, violates our territorial sovereignty and kills civilians as if it were Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, or Syria. Two pregnant women, two children, and two adult males were killed by shots fired from helicopter gunships piloted by U.S. soldiers on a boat on River Patuca returning to their community. There were workers in the local lobster and shellfish diving industry. And this reality, from the perspective of human rights organizations, is unacceptable and reprehensible. And as Cofada recognizes in the statement, the United States is very much at war in Latin America, from Mexico through Central America to Colombia, leaving a wake of violence and bodies in its path. A recent article by Tom Burghardt describes in detail how the U.S. is indeed the prime source of the grisly violence plaguing this region. Thus, the U.S., in fighting the so-called war on drugs, is fueling the conflict with guns and advanced weaponry. Weaponry which helps to prop up repressive governments such as those in Mexico, Honduras, and Colombia, which in any case ends up in the hands of the very drug cartels the U.S. is claiming to fight, and which is killing massive numbers of civilians, 50,000 in Mexico, 250,000 in Colombia. No wonder then that the entire region was united against the United States and Canada in calling at the Summit of the Americas for the end of this war and to the decriminalization of drugs. Yet due to the media blackout on such issues, the vast majority of Americans do not even know that the United States is at war just south of our border and do not understand why our southern neighbors are demanding a change in the senseless policy. The media's failure in the U.S. in this regard is inexcusable. Dan Kovalik is the author of that. He's a human and labor rights lawyer, and this was published today at Huffington Post. Boy, we're just going to kill them all, aren't we, huh? War on terror, war on drugs, helicopter gunships, drone aircraft, blowing people away. Bang, 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 you're dead. Bang, 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 your children are dead. Bang, 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 your mama's dead. Bang, bang, your daddy's dead. Bang, bang, they're all dead. Bang, bang. We shut you down. Bang, bang, you hit the ground. Jesus, God. As the writer of that piece at Huffington Post put it, you know, most Americans don't have a clue. I had no idea we were operating helicopter gunships and killing people from the sky in Honduras. Did you, Truth Seeker? Somehow that one got past me.
exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me.
Ten before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by James Surreal. And he would like, among other things, for you to visit the website 911expertsspeakout.org. Andy also is inviting you to join Ed Asner and representatives from the 1,700 member architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth for the premiere of the film 9/11, Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. It'll be in Beverly Hills, California, this coming Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. at the Music Hall Theater. You can order tickets and get other information about this film at 911expertsspeakout.org. So check it out, okay? Thank you, James, for the sponsorship. I wish I was in that city. I would definitely go. Regarding the money that is not being used as it was intended, the settlement, or not, well, I guess it was some kind of a settlement from these predatory, vicious banks, is being used to plug the holes and budget gaps in the states and not use as it was intended. Bruce Enberger writes that the states had used the settlement money as it was intended, meager as it was. It would have multiplied through the local economy and over a relatively short period of time produced more tax revenue. Empty houses produce zero taxes, and displaced people are a drain on the local economy instead of adding to it. If used as intended, the settlement would have produced far more revenue than it replaced when red state governments stole it to plug budget holes they created with tax breaks and other giveaways to the Republican cronies. But that is exactly why they did it. In fact, where they could, they simply made the money disappear, as not using it at all did the most possible damage. Yeah. Come on, America. It's time to... Really, isn't it? I mean, come on, folks. Is it time yet to say enough of this? I mean, no, not yet, huh? Okay. Are you sure? You're absolutely sure it's not time to turn out into the streets in the millions, in the tens of millions, if we really had people who are interested in staving off fascism. I know, everything just seems so normal. You get up in the morning when you go about your business, go to the job that you're struggling to hold on to, take the kids to school, whatever. There's still traffic on the expressways, right? The stores are open, people are coming, people are going. You get out in the traffic in your city at noon. Why? There's hither and dither, traffic here, traffic there, trains running, buses running, scampering little ants running all which ways? Here we go. Go to your nearest Target. Look, people coming, people going. Look at Walmart. People coming, people going. I mean, it all looks so normal, right? What's wrong? What are you talking about, Malloy? You goddamn liberals. You just, all you want to do is scare the poop out of people, right? I don't have any answer for that because, you know, things are not right, and we should be paying attention, and we should be really, really involved, really involved in our communities, really involved in our country, and really involved in making a stand against what is happening, what is just coming down on us like a damn avalanche. I mean, hello? Anybody? Anybody out there? Knock, knock, knock. No? a bit of cultural bad news today, the death of Donna Summer. I know. But I really did enjoy, in some perverse way, that period of time, the music in the 70s and early 80s. Remember all that? Oh, I know! It's so cool to hate disco. I know. I understand. I get it. I know. We're going to talk about this next hour, I'm pretty sure. You heard about this this guy, Joe Ricketts, the founder of the brokerage firm TD Ameritrade. You see the commercials on television all the time. He's another one of these filthy, disgusting billionaires. He also owns the Chicago Cubs. Boy, is that a shame. I used to love to go to Wrigley Field. Remember, Kathy? Here with this large, arrogant, fascist son of a bitch had in the works until the New York Times blew his cover on the front page above the fold in this morning's edition. Did you hear what they were going to do? They're going to drag out every stereotype, every racist stereotype, every homophobic stereotype, everything that they could, and throw it at Obama to defeat him. Not on his policies. They were going to go for your goddamn jugular. They were going to go for that little part of you white people that will never reconcile yourself to living with people of color, especially not being led by one. No matter how good or bad Obama is, most white people in this country, okay, not most, but a huge chunk of white people don't pay any attention to whether or not he's a good governor of the country. They only pay attention to one thing, the skin color. And this guy that runs TD Ameritrade and the Chicago Cubs, this son of a bitch had a plan. He and his billionaire buddies, they were going to rip this country to pieces. And why do they do it? For the same reason a dog licks his own crotch. Because he can. Being sponsored by Walter Abraham. His message, liberalbiznet.com, is building an online business directory so liberals and progressives can spend money with left-leaning business owners. Please check our low-cost advertising. Keep it lit. Liberal, as it sounds, biz, B-I-Z, net, liberalbiznet.com. liberalbiznet.com. Thanks, Walter. So I open up the Times this morning, as I'm wont to do most mornings. Kathy takes Molly and goes to school. Then Kathy goes to the gym and beats a living hell out of people in her taekwondo class or whatever the hell she's taking that day. I know she kicks ass, though. So I have a few hours, and I really like this. I have a few hours at home alone to peruse the newspaper and The Nation and New Yorker. Seriously, I like that time of day. So, open up the paper this morning. Bada bing, bada boom, and there it is. GOP Super PAC weighs hardline attack on Obama. So I start to read this and find out that a group of high-profile Republican strategists, people from the McCain campaign, people from, used to suck around Sarah Palin, all the rest of these scum suckers, working with this billionaire, Ricketts, Joe Ricketts, who owns TD Ameritrade, the founder of the brokerage firm TD Ameritrade, and also owns the Chicago Cubs. Boy, that's sad. They put together a campaign to launch an attack on Obama that even these filthy goddamn Republicans, for the most part, have stayed away from. They were going for America's gut, this group of filthy fascists led by this disgusting Ricketts. They were going to go all in. They dug around in the slop that they had put together during the 08 campaign, and they found these old tapes that they put together of Jeremiah Wright. Remember him? The preacher who quoted, who was it? Stokely Carmichael, H. Rapp Brown, who made the perfectly accurate statement years ago that the chickens in America were coming home to roost. Jeremiah Wright said that after the 2001 attack on this country, engineered one way or the other by the Bush crime family. Now, you'll remember that two Caucasoid leading evangelical preachers, one a former presidential candidate, Falwell, and who's the other one? Pat Robertson. They sat around and said that the queers and the feminists and the liberals had caused the attack on 9/11. Did you see Democratic office holders or aspirants to be office holders picking up on that garbage out of the filthy pie holes of these disgusting, soon to be dead, both of them, one already is, Christians? Caucasoid Christians? No, not at all. But Jeremiah Wright, who spoke the truth. The chickens were coming home to roost, so to speak. After all the slaughter and bloodshed and death and destruction that the U.S. security state had waged against so many people in so many countries, this hemisphere, that hemisphere, this country, Middle East, South Asia, it doesn't make any difference, Central America, South America, all over the goddamn planet. So finally, somebody struck back, and they struck back hard, and 3,000 people died on American soil. And since those 3,000 people died, the United States government has ordered and carried out the death and destruction of at least another million. But the plan by these right-wingers, led by this filthy, filthy fascist Ricketts. What's his first name? Joe. To hit America on that one spot that Caucasoids know can be activated very quickly. The race button. You know, these right-wingers are always talking about, oh, well, Obama's using a race card. Just because Obama said, Trayvon Martin, the kid that was killed down in Trayvon, not Traver, come on. The Trayvon Martin, if Obama had a son, he'd look like him. And right away, these filthy, disgusting, cockroach, caucasoid Republicans jump up and start screaming and farting and pissing and vomiting about, oh, yeah, look, he's injecting race. This is what they do. Oh, dear God, these people drive me just right to the brink of massive rage. So the plan was to go after Obama purely on a race-based attack. $10 million was to be budgeted for this. Now, in addition to what they were planning, it was all to be overseen by a piece of scum called Fred Davis. Davis had worked on the... What did he work on? Well, recently worked on the campaign of former Governor John Huntsman of Utah, which is surprising because Huntsman never did anything except sit there and look like a movie star. But the Times refers to this piece of human dreck as a colorful Republican operative. Colorful Republican operative. This is what drives me mad about American media. He's not a colorful Republican operative. He's a fascist son of a bitch who wants to destroy the country. And this Joe Ricketts was going to provide the money to do it. And if there's one thing Joe Ricketts has, it's lots of money. Oh, yeah. Supreme Court. Robert Supreme Court, see what you have wrought, you fascist thugs. So anyway, the group suggested that they had to hire a Negro who, as spokesman, the way they put it, an extremely literate conservative African-American. An extremely literate conservative African-American. Oh, my. Well, extremely literate as opposed to what?
Well, we don't want your average, African-American. We want one that's extremely literate. Because, you know, we're going to be talking to very smart caucasoids. We really are. So we need an extremely literate African-American. Anybody know of any? We don't allow them here at the club, and I don't, you know, I have no idea. Once my wife worked at a hospital where there were some dark-skinned people. I don't know what they were. They might have been Negroes. They might have been Indians. I have no idea. Did anybody know a literate, extremely literate African-American? Hello? Anybody?
Past the hour. So anyway, where were we? Joe Ricketts, the founder of the brokerage firm TD Ameritrade. Remember, the next time you see the commercials and the commercials play, especially during the morning when the rates are cheaper, they're all over the place. Cable TV, broadcast over-the-air TV. Anyway, this guy Joe Ricketts is increasingly putting all this money that he has stolen into work to bring about fascism in this country and make him even richer and put him at the pile of the dung heap that is fascist America. The $10 million plan that Ricketts was bankrolling included preparation for how to respond to the charges of race baiting. They were going to race bait to an extreme that has been unknown in American political contests. Well, obviously, we've never had African American president, but this son of a bitch was going to raise race baiting to an art form. And they needed something to respond with when they were accused of race baiting. Not that Brian Williams or Wolf Blitzer or Diane Sawyer or any of these other big-ass anchors would ever go so far as to look at something that is race baiting and say, ooh, that's race baiting. No, they would say, oh, another colorful character in the presidential politics. Oh, both sides are just so bad. Both sides just don't know how to conduct themselves civilly. Both sides, right? Well, word got out on the front page of the New York Times because somebody put the booklet, the proposal that these scum had put together, into the hands of the Times. The document has a logo on it entitled Strategic Perception. That's the political advertising arm of the colorful Republican operative, Mr. Davis. This afternoon, Joe Ricketts released a statement saying, no, we weren't going to do that. No. The statement was released through someone called Brian Baker, president of his super PAC, the Ending Spending Action Fund. Ending Spending. Mm-hmm. And these scum-sucking caucasoids asserted that the proposal was just that. Oh, we weren't serious. We weren't really going to do this. No, what are you kidding me? No, we're just having fun. Bunch of us got stinking goddamn drunk at the country club the other night and decided to have fun. You know, we're caucasoids. We get to do this. We're very, very wealthy caucasoids. We get to do any goddamn thing we want to in the United States of America. We do whatever we want. So the statement came out, Joe Ricketts is a registered independent, a fiscal conservative, and an outspoken critic of the Obama administration, but he is neither the author nor the funder of the so-called Ricketts Plan. I wonder why they called it that. To defeat Mr. Obama, that the New York Times wrote about this morning. Not only was this plan merely a proposal, if it really existed at all, one of several submitted, but it reflects an approach to politics that Mr. Ricketts rejects. And it was never a plan to be accepted, but only a suggestion for a direction to take. Mr. Ricketts intends to work hard to help elect a president this fall who shares his commitment to economic responsibility. But his efforts are and will continue to be focused entirely on questions of fiscal policy, not attacks that seek to divide us socially or culturally. Oh, my God, no. Whatever gave you that impression? How did you liberal bastards at the New York Times ever come to the conclusion that because Joe Ricketts was funding, organizing, printing, putting together, backing, lying, cheating, stealing, that he was somehow behind this? Where do you people get your information? Joe Ricketts is a good, solid American. He's just a little bit conservative. Don't worry, not to worry. Oh, God. However, Brian Baker, did not reject the contents of the proposal. The statement from Baker was released as the Ricketts family sought to respond to the fallout from the story. Joe Ricketts, a real caucasoid and a real American. Yeah.
up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Walter Abraham. His message, liberalbiznet.com is building an online business directory so liberals and progressives can spend money with left-leaning business owners. Please check out our low-cost advertising and keep it lit. The website is liberalbiznet.com, liberalbiznet.com. Check them out, okay? Thanks, Walter. All right, I need a break here. I really do. So we're going to play for you what we played a couple of weeks ago, the return of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. This is the first in a what will be an ongoing series that Bob Alexander writes and produces, and is performed by the Mighty Malloy After Hours Players. This is the first in the comeback of the series, and the second episode will be tomorrow night. So let's go with this one that we originally broadcast a couple of weeks ago.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
The following is an announcement from Dr. Menlo Park of the American Institute of Advanced Radiotronics.
Thank you and good evening. The program you are about to hear is the product of months of painstaking work by restoration teams from the American Institute of Advanced Radiotronics. As you may remember, the Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe series was completely revamped for the 2007-2008 season. Millions of dollars were spent producing live sound effects.
Cue them up! Cue the Air Force! Cheering extras.
Along with assembling the world's finest musicians for the proposed Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe Symphonic Orchestra. The 36-episode storyline would have been the most ambitious radio series of its time. Sadly, tragedy struck 4 days before airtime. Saboteurs dressed as flying monkeys broke into the production facility and armed with military-grade cellophane burned the complex to the ground. All the recordings and production equipment were destroyed. But all was not lost. In the spring of 2010, new advances in hard drive data retrieval made it possible to begin reconstruction of most of the 36 episodes. The first three installments were far too damaged for even our sophisticated techniques, but tonight we are pleased to bring you the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
Two travelers blast beyond the barriers of space and time through a million could-be years of 1,080 worlds. Yes, radio listeners, it's time once again to join truth seekers from around the globe who anxiously await the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
You remember last time Mike, Kathy, and Asta tracked down the mysterious ringleader of the American Tea Party to a seemingly abandoned warehouse on the edge of town. Falling through a secret panel, they discovered the secret laboratory of the Tea Party kingpin, who turned out to be none other than undead uber-Nazi and rocket scientist Werner von Braun. The zombie Nazi quickly overpowered Mike, Kathy, and Asta by flooding the lab with knockout gas and locked them into the Tesla Time-O-Matic, a temporal displacement pod von Braun had stolen from forgotten inventor Nikola Tesla. Let's listen in, shall we, as Mike, Kathy, and Asta continue their fight against the flying monkey right in tonight's thrilling episode, Chapter 4, A New Hope.
Kathy, are you all right?
Oh, I think so. What happened?
I don't know. The last thing I remember...
They don't have time for cheap expositional passages. I knocked you out, threw you into a time machine pod, and I'm about to send you careening through time where you'll never bother me or anyone else again.
You can't do this.
Sure I can. What time do you have?
Time?
Yeah? What time is it?
It's 4:00.
Okay, then. 4, 3, 2, 1. Blast off!
Wait!
Always enjoy a good countdown.
Mike, was he serious? Is this really a time machine?
Who knows? We've only got a few minutes left in this episode to figure a way out of here. There must be a control panel or something.
Here's a keyboard. There must be an onboard computer.
Yeah, how do we turn it on?
It's probably already running. Is there a monitor?
Over here. I switched it on. nothing but a blue screen. Hit the escape key. Hit any key.
Okay. Here goes.
Welcome to voice print identification. When you see the red light go on, would you please state in the following order: your destination, your nationality, and your full name. Surname first, Christian name, and initial.
What?
Thank you.
What?
You are cleared through voice print identification.
Well, that was easy enough. I thought there'd be some sort of security.
It's Windows 3.1, Mike. Anybody can break into this thing. I'll see if I can start the main program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I am a HAL 9000.
Oh, no. This isn't good at all.
This is really HAL? I mean, HAL. HAL. From the movie, HAL.
It sure sounds like it.
I hope the two of you are not concerned about this.
I don't know. Maybe it's because you killed everybody?
Just a moment.
Now what?
I've just picked up a fault in the AE-35 unit.
What's that?
It's going to go 100% failure.
So, we're all going to die, right?
Well, yes.
Mike, Kathy, and Asta are careening through time, guided only by an obstinate, brain-damaged, homicidal computer. Can they escape back into their own time? Here's a scene from our next episode.
Well, here goes.
Silent Breed is people!
Yeah, probably went a little too far.
For more heart-pounding excitement, be sure to tune in next time for The Return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
That's just a taste. Now, that episode begins a series of episodes, and tomorrow night we will provide for you the next in the series. As a matter of fact, since tomorrow is Friday night, we will probably play tomorrow night's episode twice, once during the first hour and once during the third hour for our listeners in a different, you'll pardon the expression, time zone. Where was I? Oh, yeah, Joe Ricketts. TD Ameritrade, Super PAC, Chicago Cubs, gonna unleash a torrent of racist attacks on Obama. Caucasoids with hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars really, really know how to use the money, don't they? There's not a wealthy Caucasoid in this country who is not fully aware of how to use the race button. Not a card, for Christ's sake. It's a button. And the reason they know how to use it is because they have one. Now, regardless of what you've heard, I know there are a lot of white liberals around who swear to their dusky brethren, I'm not a racist. I swear I'm not. And most of them are very sincere when they say that. But the truth is, deep within the nether regions of every Caucasoid in this country, there is, if nothing else, that little tiny germ of a Klansman. It's there, holding a noose. It's there. Now, most good liberals, progressives, have figured out how to take that little demon and throttle him and, you know, gag him, tie him up, and keep him way down in the cellar of his soul. But that only works as long as you don't have someone like Joe Ricketts running around screaming, what about this N-word in the White House? Come on, you normal people. He loves the queers. Listen to this Reverend Wright. And on. And you know what happens then? That little tiny Klansman that's been tied up and gagged down in the deepest part of the nether regions springs alive and takes over the Caucasoid to the point where the guy or the woman who thought she was a real liberal or he thought he was a real progressive, all of a sudden, this little demonic Klansman is in control. Yeah, down with the Negroes! It's very easy to do if you are a Caucasoid and grew up in this country. Now, this is not to fault you. I'm not saying Caucasians are evil bastards. It's where we grew up. Come on. Now, again, and this does not apply, of course, to people under the age of 35. If you're under the age of 35, you're home free. If you're over the age of 35, you are not home free. Especially if you're over the age of 45. Oh, dear God, that little Klansman, I don't care how liberal you are, he's down in there. You didn't put him there. You weren't born a race-hating son of a bitch. You didn't. You weren't. That wasn't you. You were just a cute little baby in your nursery, playing with your teddy bear and nursing at mommy's breast. Somebody put that little Klansman in there, though. Huh? And Joe Ricketts knows exactly how to bring him out. Yes. Oh, my God.
Looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, you're awesome, up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia, and the devil deals in cards. And if you win, you get this..."
It's about nine before the hour. Okay, Charlie Daniels is a real turd, but, you know, I like this song. I really do. But I like the version that they, you know, there are two versions. "I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there ever was." I like the version, "I told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best there ever was," right? The devil plays a lot better than Charlie Daniels anyway. But anyway, this hour has been sponsored by Walter Abraham. His message, liberalbiznet.com is building an online business directory so liberals and progressives can spend money with left-leaning business owners. So please check out their low-cost advertising. And Walter includes Keep It Lit. Liberal BizNet, liberalbiznet.com, liberalbiznet.com. All right? Check them out. Now, one last thing on this. Joe, what's his name? Ricketts, the guy that owns, the founder of TD Ameritrade and the owner of the Chicago Cubs, who decided to unleash a racial torrent of hatred across the United States in order to defeat Obama. Obama's policies have made Joe Ricketts even richer than this piece of dreck was before Obama got elected. But you see, Obama is dark-skinned and nappy-haired. And Joe Ricketts, who I saw a picture of today, is one of the ugliest Caucasoids. Most of these Caucasoids who don't like black folk are just so ugly. I mean, they are ugly to the ninth power. But anyway, what I said earlier about, you know, if you're white American over the age of 40, 35, 40, 45. You've got the little Klansman living down inside of you. And again, let me just, I've got one too. Come on, are you kidding me? I'm not saying it's your fault or my fault. It isn't. You know, we're not born that way. Racism, sexism, homophobia, all that stuff. You're not born with that. That has to be carefully and deliberately cultivated inside your little mind and soul when you are so young. And, you know, kids pick up on stuff. It doesn't have to be a direct lecture. Now, little Mike, sit down. I want to tell you something about the Negroes. No. It doesn't work that way. So, please don't take offense when I point out. It's just that most Caucasoids can't stand that. Most white folks cannot get used to the idea that over the age of 45, that inside them is this little Klansman. You can smash him. He's a very resilient little booger, though. About the best you can do is to figure out a way to tie him up, gag him, and he's never going to die. He's going to stay down there until you die. Once you die, then he dies. And hopefully you will not have passed on, I will not have passed on, to my children and grandchildren, another little Klansman. So it's not that, you know, all white people are choose to be racist. In fact, very few, if any, actually are born that way. Now, I'm discounting the fact that right-wingers are born already insane. But I'm talking about liberals and progressives who also have the little Klansmen down in there. Anyway, I'm belaboring the point. You know what I'm trying to say. Ricketts, who claims, oh, I didn't know anything. Oh, I have nothing to do. No. However, there was a note attached to this brochure, this proposal, this well-produced, it had storyboarded, it had everything in it, what they were going to do to Barack Obama, what they were going to do to the American public with their racist, homophobic attack. And there was a note about staffing for the effort. Now, this should sort of counterbalance all the claims by these scum. We were just sitting around, you know, getting drunk and pinching waitresses' asses, and we came up with this idea. We didn't really mean anything. Hey, honey, bring me another bourbon. Bring your ass over here, too. No, we don't mean anything. Well, what about this? There was a note that said, quote, with your preliminary approval at the New York meeting, we have discussed this plan in highly confidential terms with the following proposed team members. All are ready to jump into action upon plan approval. All right-wingers are liars. And it's an accumulated thing. The richer they are, the more they lie. Someone who has a net worth, a right-winger net worth of $10 million is a liar. $100 million, a goddamn liar. $1 billion, his entire life is a lie. Just keep that in mind. File that away. When we come back, I am going to, this is reiterate night, I guess, first with the Mike Mueller Radio Gumshoe, but also Derek Jensen's a new declaration. We talked about this a couple of months ago. And I want to bring it up again because I think it's pertinent. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Raging Lefty. I like Raging Lefty. I like that name, Raging Lefty. And here's what Raging Lefty writes with the message. This hour is dedicated to Charlie Chaplin, actor, writer, director, composer, and humanitarian. Everyone loved Charlie Chaplin except the corporatists. They hated him. And here's why. One, in the character of the tramp, Charlie Chaplin humanized homelessness, hunger, poverty, and persecution. Everyone sympathized and cheered for the tramp, except the corporatists, or the capitalists. Behind the polite and humble manner of the tramp, there was a masterful prankster whose main targets were rich fat cats and brutes. Everyone laughed, except the corporatists. In his first two talking movies, The Great Dictator and Monsieur Verdot, Charlie Chaplin had an anti-war message. The corporatists disapproved and attempted to censor these movies. And during the McCarthy Inquisition, Charlie Chaplin was accused of being a communist agitator, and Charlie quipped, "No, I'm a peace agitator." That was the last straw. Charlie Chaplin was banished from this sad country, but his power of laughter has never been forgotten. In remembrance of Charlie Chaplin, please participate in the Laugh Riot Day tomorrow, May 18th. After all, we know we cannot reason with the corporatists or their minions, so we might just as well laugh at them. Thanks, Raging Lefty. Regarding the skin lesions that are showing up on the flight attendants with Alaska Airlines, whether or not they are caused by some sort of preservative sprayed onto their uniforms, manufactured in China, if that's where they're manufactured, if that's what's happening, or if it's a result of radiation, or if it has something to do with polar bears and seals who are also having some weird skin lesions and hair loss. Gee, it could be just anything, right? Certainly stirred up a little bit of debate last night on the program, but an email from Karen in Sacramento, who writes, "Mike, a few months ago while leaving a solar conference in San Francisco, I rode on a shuttle to the airport with a group of flight attendants who told me of this issue. So count this as yet another source. They were frustrated and having a very hard time getting the airline to work with them. I don't recall the airline at this time, but the topic tonight was the very first time I had to think of it outside of learning about it that day." Karen in Sacramento. Well, not to worry. It's probably some flame retardant or something, because the Chinese are so concerned about the safety of the people who buy or wear or eat or ingest the products made in that filthy country, right? Uh-oh! Here come the emails from Chinese Americans. I'm sorry. It's not the country's filthy. It's the system and the leadership and the people, the so-called, you know, these new capitalists, these entrepreneurs who don't give a goddamn about anything other than the same thing that American corporations care about. Nothing. Absolutely nothing except profit. But I digress. To hell with it. Dan Shapiro is the U.S. envoy to Israel. And he is Jewish, and he says that the United States has plans in place to attack Tehran, if necessary, to prevent it from becoming an atomic military power. Ooh. In remarks before the Israel Bar Association in Jerusalem, Dan Shapiro said the U.S. hopes diplomacy and economic sanctions will pressure Iran to abandon its suspect nuclear program. But he says that the U.S. will use military force. He says that doesn't mean that the military force option is not fully available. Not just available, but it's ready. The necessary planning has been done to ensure that it's ready. Associated Press obtained a recording of his remarks last Tuesday. Now, so-called world powers, the big capitalist bully bastards, are to meet with Iran for a new round of nuclear talks in Baghdad, Iraq, next week. Iran, of course, denies it's building bombs. When did they start this attitude with Brazil? Brazil is in the process of building up its nuclear power, developing centrifuges and all that stuff that's necessary to develop nuclear weapons. Brazil has made it very clear it is going to become a nuclear power. Brazil has also made it very clear that some of this nuclear power will be used for energy generation. Although in Central South America, there's an enormous amount of construction damming up the huge rivers that flow through Bolivia, Ecuador, Brazil. And, of course, the result of that will be indigenous people. First peoples who live in those countries will be, given a choice. Either move your ass or drown from the lakes that will be formed to build these huge hydroelectric power generators. That's right. So why not start talking about invading and bombing and killing and murdering Brazilians the same way that the U.S. and Israel and Europe and, you know, whoever else talks about bombing and attacking and murdering and killing Iranians? What's the difference? Somebody tell me the difference. Quick, what's the difference? Brazil, Iran, both are intent on developing, quote, nuclear energy, end quote. What's the difference? Brazil, it's my understanding, is also either directly or indirectly let it be known that they are interested in nuclear weaponry also as a deterrent. Against whom? Against Paraguay? Against Venezuela? Who? It's my understanding that even though it is an oil-rich country, that Venezuela is also interested in developing nuclear energy. But Brazil is a huge country. Why not, when did the sanctions start against Brazil? What's the difference? Somebody tell me. Hello? Anybody? What about Pakistan? Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Bombs. When do we stop giving the Pakistanis billions upon billions of dollars? When does that stop? Why don't we begin sanctions and start talking about attacking that country? Mr. Shapiro, do you want to weigh in on this? As if he were listening. But what is the difference? What's the difference between Brazil and Iran? Why does Iran pose such a threat to us that we have contingency plans to annihilate Iran and Brazil doesn't? Anybody? Do I see any hands? Oh, I see hands going up all over the room. A few weeks back, a couple of months back, I got something from Bob Alexander entitled A New Declaration. And it's by Derek Jensen, who is the author of Deep Green Resistance. And I think it's time to share that with you again when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
right now, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Before I get to the Derek Jensen piece, email from Terry in Flushing, New York. Mike, last night I was listening to the Al Sharpton radio program on WWRL in New York City. Why don't they carry our program, Kathy? I don't remember her name, but he had a guest who discussed how much those who are against gay marriage are in favor of a Christian marriage. However, they don't have a problem with a Jewish man and woman getting married or a Muslim man and woman getting married, both of which do not result in, surprise, surprise, a Christian marriage. So what difference does it make if a gay couple gets married? Have a good evening, Terry. Nothing. It really has nothing to do with Christianity. Never has, never did. It's just some weird, it's been incorporated into Christianity. It also exists in Judaism, conservative Judaism, and Islam. It's bigotry. It's what you find in religion. Hatred and bigotry, period. The Republicans are trying to destroy just about everything. We all know that. Because they are evil sons of bitches who should be, there should be a button where every time Republicans start to piss you off enough, you can go and maybe buy a ticket and go into a labyrinth. We have to make this a little bit difficult. And you have to find your way through the labyrinth. And in the very center of the labyrinth, there is an altar. On the altar, there is a pulsating red button. And when you get to the red button, you can push it, and immediately, 2% of all Republicans alive will vaporize. Pew! Gone. Now, if that happens 50 times, even though they do have a breeding rate, but if that happens 50 times, then all these filthy right-wing Republicans are gone. You know, you just work your way into the labyrinth, find the pulsating red button, and push it. What an alien race of freaks. Here's the latest. As the New York Times said in an editorial today, you can add fish and oceans to the long list of environmental issues that Republicans don't care about. Last week, the House voted to deny further funding to a federal program that helps regulate commercial fisheries and has been increasingly important to the recovery of several at-risk species. And in addition, House Republicans also killed financing for a worthy effort by the Obama administration to improve the health of America's coastal waters. See, the Republicans, if they want to go for a swim at the beach, they don't go here. They have one of their capitalist owners send them to a different part of the planet that has yet to be polluted. Filthy bastards. Figures released Monday by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration showed that six fish species, including haddock and summer flounder, had rebounded to sustainable levels over the past year. Let's hear a cheer for that. Yeah! The good news is in part the result of a strategy called catch shares, under which regional fish councils set overall limits on the annual harvest and then apportion the catch among individual fishermen. Why, that's socialism! It is! It's democratic socialism! It makes wonderful sense. And in fact, most commercial fishermen support the program, which was strongly backed by the murderer George W. Bush. Yet some recreational fishing organizations and their Republican allies in Congress to continue to oppose it. In a letter to colleagues just before a 220 to 191 vote prohibiting further expansion of the program, Steve Sutherland, Republican bastard from Florida, and Michael Grimm, Republican prick from New York, declared that, quote, catch shares are no different than any other inside-the-Beltway-style tactic determined to destroy every aspect of American freedom under the guise of conservation, end quote. See how they do this? Also caught in this anti-regulation slipstream was Obama's national ocean policy, a White House effort to address ocean-related issues, ranging from municipal water pollution to wetlands preservation. Republicans saw this blameless attempt to coordinate policy as a threat to jobs and voted to prohibit the use of federal dollars to carry it out. So the House imposed these prohibitions in a measure financing the Commerce Department and other agencies. This is what these slimy rat bastards do. They attach these amendments. The Senate, which is developing its own appropriations bill, must make sure that this garbage, this filth, this murder by Republicans and their corporate owners does not become law.
This year,
do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by a raging lefty who is dedicating the hour to Charlie Chaplin. Oh, God, you didn't do that. Charlie Chaplin, actor, writer, director, composer, and humanitarian. Everyone loved Charlie Chaplin except the capitalists. They hated him, and the list of reasons is fairly long. In remembrance of Charlie Chaplin, please participate in the Laugh Riot Day tomorrow, Friday, May 18th. After all, we know we cannot reason with the corporatists or their minions, so we just might as well laugh at them. Thank you, Raging Lefty. Derek Jensen, if you know who he is, the author of Deep Green Resistance and lecturer, writer, Bob Alexander is the man who turned me on to Derek Jensen, and Bob sent me a piece some time ago. And I did it on the air, but given what is going on, I think I need to do this again, so your indulgence, please. It's entitled A New Declaration, and Jensen writes, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that the real physical world is the source of our own lives and the lives of others. A weakened planet is less capable of supporting life, human or otherwise. Thus, the health of the real world is primary, more important than any social or economic system, because all social or economic systems are dependent upon a living planet." May I add, duh. Back to Jensen. "It is self-evident that to value a social system that harms the planet's capacity to support life over life itself is to be out of touch with physical reality. Any life, any way of life based on the use of non-renewable resources is by definition not sustainable. That any way of life based on the hyper-exploitation of renewable resources is by definition not sustainable. If, for example, fewer salmon return every year, eventually there will be none. This means that for a way of life to be sustainable, it must not harm native communities, native prairies, native forests, native fisheries, and so on. It is self-evident that the real world is interdependent, such that harm done to rivers harms those humans and non-humans whose lives depend on these rivers. Harms forests and prairies and wetlands surrounding these rivers. Harms the oceans into which these rivers flow. Harm done to mountains harms the rivers flowing through them. Harm done to oceans harms everyone directly or indirectly connected to them. It is self-evident that you cannot argue with physics. If you burn carbon-based fuels, this carbon will go into the air and have effects in the real world. It is self-evident that creating and releasing poisons into the world will poison humans and non-humans. That no one, no matter how rich or powerful, should be allowed to create poisons for which there's no antidote. That no one, no matter how rich or powerful, should be allowed to create messes that cannot be cleaned up. That no one, no matter how rich or powerful, should be allowed to destroy places humans or non-humans need to survive. That no one, no matter how rich or powerful, should be allowed to drive human cultures or non-human species extinct. That reality trumps all belief systems. What you believe is not nearly so important as what is real. It is self-evident that on a finite planet, you cannot have an economy based on or requiring growth. At least you cannot have one and expect to either have a planet or a future. It is self-evident that the current way of life is not sustainable and will collapse. The only real questions are what will be left of the world after that collapse and how bad things will be for the humans and non-humans who come after. We hold it as self-evident that we should do all that we can to make sure that as much of the real physical world remains intact until the collapse of the current system, and that humans and non-humans should be as prepared as possible for this collapse. It is self-evident that the health of local economies are more important than the health of a global economy. That a global economy should not be allowed to harm local economies or land bases. That corporations are not living beings. They are certainly not human beings. It is self-evident that corporations do not, in any real sense, exist. They are legal fictions. Limited liability corporations are institutions created explicitly to separate humans from the effects of their actions, making them, the corporations, by definition, inhuman and inhumane. To the degree that we desire to live in a human and humane world, and really to the degree that we wish to survive, limited liability corporations need to be eliminated. We hold it as self-evident that the health of human and non-human communities is more important than the profits of corporations. We hold it as self-evident, as the Declaration of Independence states, quote, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, of course, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, end quote. Let me repeat that. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, the ends being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Further, we hold it as self-evident that it would be more precise to say that it is not the right of the people, nor even their responsibility, but instead something more like breathing, something that if we fail to do, we die. If we, as a people, fail to rid our communities of destructive institutions, those institutions will destroy our communities. And if we, in our communities, cannot provide meaningful and non-destructive ways for people to gain food, clothing, and shelter, then we must recognize it's not just specific destructive institutions, but the entire economic system that is pushing the natural world past breaking points. Capitalism is killing the planet. industrial civilization is killing the planet. Capitalism is killing the planet. Industrial civilization is killing the planet. Once we've recognized the destructiveness of capitalism and industrial civilization, both of which are based on systematically converting a living planet into dead commodities, once we've recognized this, we've no choice unless we wish to sign our own and our children's death warrants, but to fight for all we're worth and in every way we can to overturn it. Repeat. Once we've recognized the destructiveness of capitalism and industrial civilization, both of which are based on systematically converting a living planet into dead commodities, once we've recognized that, we've no choice, unless we wish to sign our own and our children's death warrants, we have no choice but to fight for all we're worth and in every way we can to overturn it. Derek Jensen, writing, I don't think that's in Deep Green Resistance. It may be, but it is his new declaration. You can find it. Derek Jensen, A New Declaration. I swear to God, if you are a responsible, caring, alive human being, I'm not including right-wingers because they don't care, you should get this, print it off, and put it someplace where you can take a look at it at least once a day. I mean, that's what I think, but I have it right here, about 18 inches, 24 inches from my face attached to the glass in the studio between Kathy and me. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I read something like that, it's just like, okay, yeah, this makes such sense. And then I read an editorial in the New York Times this morning about how the Republicans are destroying, defunding efforts just to preserve different species of fish. God damn, what is this filthy effing madness? Breathe, Mike.
Dixieland, the rains were falling. Families lost, people calling. Look away, look away, look away from Dixieland. Look away from Dixieland. Look
before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Raging Lefty, who is sponsoring it in dedication to Charlie Chaplin. And Raging Lefty explains everyone loved Charlie Chaplin except the corporatists, the capitalists. They hated him, and here's why. In the character of the tramp, Charlie Chaplin humanized homelessness, hunger, poverty, and persecution. Everyone sympathized and cheered for the tramp except the corporatists. Behind the polite and humble manner of the tramp belied a masterful prankster whose main targets were rich fat cats and brutes. Everyone laughed, except the corporatists. In his first two talking movies, The Great Dictator and Monsieur Verdoux, Charlie Chaplin had an anti-war message. The corporatists disapproved and attempted to censor these movies. And during the McCarthy Inquisition, Charlie Chaplin was accused of being a communist agitator. And Charlie quipped, "No, I'm a peace agitator." That was the last straw. Charlie Chaplin was banished from this sad country, but his power of laughter has never been forgotten. So, in remembrance of Charlie Chaplin, please participate in the Laugh Riot Day on Friday, tomorrow. After all, we know we cannot reason with the corporatists or their minions, so we might as well just laugh at them. Sounds like a good way to exercise your lung power. I'm all for it. Thanks, Raging Lefty. Bob Alexander sent me something here. It's called, he calls it a simple plan. He writes, this is another one of those Save the Planet petitions that he got online. He writes, our argument is very simple. Here's a quote. It's crazy, but right now our government give nearly, our governments, plural, give nearly $1 trillion a year of our taxpayer money to big oil and coal to destroy our planet. Key leaders, including President Obama, who is hosting the G8, have already agreed to stop these polluter payments. Now, if we demand that they act on their word and divert this huge sum into renewable energy, experts say we could actually save our planet. It's a simple no-brainer that our leaders have already agreed to. Let's hold their feet to the fire and push President Obama to lead the world's largest economies to turn these polluting subsidies green. Sign the urgent petition below and forward this to everyone. A massive campaign now can force them from talk to action. The only reason we shovel cash into the coffers of big oil is their lobbyists have a stranglehold on our governments. But if we demand that our leaders green our tax money, we'll increase total global green investment by 400%, making solar and wind energy cheaper than oil and coal. And in the process, save the planet by putting big oil out of business. End quote. As Bob writes, now, this is a good one. $1 trillion released to subsidize green energy and make oil companies unprofitable. What a turnaround. Yeah, I know. A huge global tide of signatures wouldn't make much difference. The sociopaths running everything will really do what they want. Not what the people who pay the taxes want them to do. The entire overpopulation of the world could be unanimous. And they would say like Cheney, so? But a huge number of signers might make some people aware for the first time of just how hollow and unresponsive these so-called free societies really are. Maybe something could then be done at least to deal with the huge methane plumes already rising in the oceans. Sigh. So, I'll sign anyway and be thankful once again that I'm old and shudder when I think of what my son will have to deal with. The petition is here, avaaz.org. A-V, as in Victor, A-V-A-A-Z.org. Cynical old Bob here sees this phrase, a new plan to save the planet, and wonders what was wrong with the old plan. The plight of the Earth wasn't compelling enough? Weird, isn't it? Regards, Bob. A simple plan. Yeah, if you want to find out what he is writing about, go to avaaz.org and look for a new plan. A new plan to save the planet. A new plan. Yee-haw. a new plan to save the planet. As Alexander says, what the hell is wrong with the old one? The old plan to save the planet. The website is avaaz.org. Well, I'll tell you what, Truth Seekers. I really like to eat fish, and I like codfish. But if the Republicans have their way, I guess it's back to eating bark and weeds. And it's good fiber, though, right? Don't forget, tomorrow night, the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, twice during the program. I'll see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hi, folks. Ronnie.